Good day, folks. This is Shane Hastie for the InfoQ Culture Podcast. I'm here with Dave West. We're not at the Agile 2018 conference because he had a little bit of a misfortunate accident, but we are able to sit down and talk about a variety of things. Dave, welcome. How you doing?
Thanks, Shane. I'm good. I'm a lot better now. I apologize for missing you in San Diego. But yes, my ankle, I shattered my ankle for the viewers at home in a freak backlog refinement exercise. I shattered my ankle. I wish it was as exciting as that. But now I'm much on the road to recovery. So thanks for asking, Shane.
So what happened at Agile 2018 from Scrum.org's perspective? I assume that you heard some of the highlights of the event?
I did, even though I was on lots of pain meds, so my reflections might not be totally accurate. I heard a lot. I was in contact with my team that were there, and obviously I know a lot of people in the community. A lot of people were reached out because they heard I was injured. So what we did, though, from a Scrum.org point of view, is one of the announcements was PSM2, the new class, the Advanced Scrum Master class, which was launched during Agile. And I think we should talk a little bit about that, the motivations, et cetera, for that class, because we are seeing a change in the industry around, in certain markets, a certain level of maturity is now happening. And that's leading us to the need for more advanced content, more interesting discussions, more advanced application of the ideas of agility in organizations.
Okay, when you say maturity, what do we mean by maturity in the agile practices or agile adoption today?
It's funny, maturity might not have been the right word, but we'll come back to that in a sec. But what I mean by maturity is, so Scrum was started 25 years ago, right? You know, when we were young and carefree and both of us had hair. Oh, actually that's not stretch it. But for the last 25 years, Scrum, you know, has been being used in many different environments, in many different contexts. Agile has become, in inverted commas, mainstream over those 25 years. What we're seeing is that the discussions aren't now about, hey, is Scrum and Agile right? It's more, hey, how do we use it in these situations, in this level of complexity, at scale, you know, building cars, you know, obviously Tesla uses Scrum and Agile, SpaceX does, all of those kind of conversations around different levels of complexity. Biotech are using it for gene therapy and everything. You know, those sort of more advanced conversations are sort of entering the reference. You know, it's not about, oh, what's a backlog? You know, what does a Scrum Master do? It's more about application. It's more about really the sort of the use of it in context. And so when I say maturity, I mean that people have been doing it for a while now. And what's interesting about this is that it's still around. So because of that, people are now starting to try different things. They're starting to ask different questions. It's not that sort of rudimentary set of basics that we were talking about, I'd say, 5 years ago, even 2 years ago.
So what is this advancement or growth, or let's use the term maturity, what are the challenges that this is opening up?
So I think there's many, many different kinds of challenges. It's funny, you were sort of grieved to use the word maturity. And I think that might be because of things like CMMI and other process frameworks where maturity just meant you had a lot of documentation. Maturity just meant that somebody signed it off. So my wife always says that men don't grow up, they just get older. You know, so hopefully agile is both growing up, becoming more mature, and getting older. Because I think that a lot of people, and you probably know this better than I, are now starting to think, not in terms of, you know, one religion versus the other, you know, oh, I always do TDD. What? You're a herrick. You need to do BDD, you idiots. You know, it's not about that anymore. It's about, okay, so we're trying this, we've got these issues, let's use some of these practices, let's learn by it, let's see how we can solve some really complex problems that Agile is highlighting, problems around scale, for instance. What we found with Nexus was that when we talked to a lot of organizations, you know, you know, we relate to the sort of scaling conversation. And the reason why is because we did a lot of research. We looked, you know, talked to a lot of organizations, you know, Scrum was being practiced at scale in many organizations. And what we found over and over again was that when you had more than 10, 12 teams working together on the same integrated increment, the same problem space, the same, that it just doesn't work. The costs sort of outweigh the benefits, you know? So people now are wrestling this idea that, well, what does scale really mean in an organization? Do we scale? Is it actually right to scale up, you know, on the same product, to have thousands of people working on it? Does that actually give you the value? Or do you want to have instead think about product lines? Do you want to think about cohesion and coupling? Do you want to have better alignment? Do you want to think, you know, how do you architect a system for scale from both a business perspective and a technology? So there's some of the questions that people are asking about Agile now. You know, people are asking questions around architecture. They're asking questions around business models. They're asking questions about role, about competency, debate about skills, right? Shane, we see that over and over again. You know, we need to have teams of a certain size, you know, 10, 12 people max, that have all the skills to deliver value. But is that actually feasible? I don't know. Then if you can't do that, how do you work with others to help you? You know, what sort of dependency gets in the way of a team delivering value, as opposed to actually you can resolve and you can work through that? These are some of the questions that people are now asking in mature markets. Now, not all markets are mature, not all industries are mature. You know, we see certain industries a lot further ahead, or certain markets a lot. The Netherlands is a great example, Benelux. They seem to be doing Agile for a lot longer, and they seem to be more mature, and that they're the sort of questions, you know. But even in the Benelux, a certain, you know, retail is behind financial services, for instance, or manufacturing. But yeah, so it depends on your industry, depends on your geographical location as to the, you know, where you're at, you know, what sort of questions you're asking. But they're the kind of things that I'm seeing.
Okay, so we're moving away from the one size fits all, which I think is a wonderful thing. And you and I both have never advocated for that. But how do we get that message out more clearly?
I don't know. I mean, you know, at the heart of it, there are certain fundamental things that every single agile organization needs to do. One is empiricism, right? You need to understand and redefine how you deliver work in an empirical way, which means defining what you're trying to achieve in any backlog item and measuring that success of it and breaking things down to smaller batches so you effectively get that feedback line. We believe in self-organization. We believe in continuously improving. What's interesting is increasingly we need to wrap those fundamentals in discipline, in customer centricity, in a value model that makes sense, and also be continuously improving, sharpening our sword, getting better. Those things are at the heart of any agile implementation. Now, how you do those things will depend on the context that you're in. You know, the reason why Scrum's a framework, the reason why it's not a methodology, the reason why, you know, it tries to, it's funny, when you hear Jeff and Ken, I've probably said this to you before, so it's old news, but Jeff and Ken, one of the things that they always do over and over again with the Scrum framework is try to take things out. Now they have difference of opinions of what should be taken out, which is you sort of sit there and say, okay, it's smart guys are arguing. But ultimately, they're continuously trying to keep it to the smallest possible that it can be. Because of that, one size does not fit all. The fact is that choices have to be made. Now, that's very, very different to traditional manufacturing processes. It's very different to what most traditional organizations think. There was an interesting article by McKinsey called The Five Trademarks, or The Five Trademarks of an Agile Organization, I think. And one thing that it said that I thought was really, really interesting was it basically said, look, there is no one size fits all, but most organizations want one size fits all because the manufacturing factory model has to be replaced with an organic sort of environmental model. So instead of thinking of a, you know, factories are all about systematic processes, variability is broken, got rid of, specialization and labor and process sort of glues hierarchical decision making, specialization of labor, process glues it together to make it work, right? We get that. That's what most people think about work. That's how they think about work. Break it down, you know, use process to glue it together and have specialists delivering it because that's the most efficient, lowest risk way. Well, we have to move away from that to an organic model where we're actually thinking about behaviors. We're actually thinking about, you know, instead of process, we think about values and behaviors. Instead of, this is, I'm thinking of this up at the fly, but instead of thinking about specialists, we think about generalists that are focused on the customer and that can bring in the skills, you know, that can use Stack Overflow, which could get help as necessary, that are not these very specialist people. And instead of thinking about these hierarchies, we think about very flat models. And that's hard, right? That's hard to move to these two different ways of working.
These are fundamentally disruptive changes to pretty much any existing organization. So if I'm in one of those existing organizations, what do? Do I give up and go and join a startup, or do I try and make change from within?
Shane, I wish I had the silver bullet, you know, as you do. I go into so many organizations and I'm sort of like, oh my God, I just come out so depressed, and I'm so glad that I don't work for them. Because what we find is the middle management got into their positions by executing process, by, you know, aspiring to hierarchy. That's how they've paid more money, right? And by really kind of like managing these specialists and controlling them and being almost parental in manner. And what we're saying is, that doesn't work anymore. And it's very challenging. What do you do? I think that it depends. If you want to be successful in this new world, if you want to have a lot more fun also, then I think you have to embrace these ideas and ultimately try to bring them to that organization you're in. And if they don't sit well in that organization, either move inside that organization to find a place where it does, or leave. I honestly do believe that. Or if you don't do that, then just kind of keep your head down for a few years and hope you can retire before it all goes belly up. I think the best advertisement for the challenge that organizations face is Amazon, right? So they embody these principles on purpose, I don't know, or by accident. You know, some would argue that because Jeff Bezos is so cheap, and he's on record about being cheap, they keep teams small, because the principle of customer centricity is sort of at the heart of everything that Jeff does. That's driven a certain culture which allows empiricism to flourish. You know, he's maniacally into numbers and maniacally into data, again, supporting empiricism, self-organization, because they won't pay managers, because again, they get too cheap. You know, continuous improvement, because that's the only way of keeping Jeff happy. You know, you could argue whether Agile was a success on purpose or not. But if you look at when Amazon moves into a market, healthcare in the US is where they're moving in. So you see instantly these traditional organizations, what happens to them? Their share price drops instantly. So ultimately, if you believe in the power of markets, this way is ultimately going to be the only way organizations are constructed. However, that transition period is going to be incredibly painful and will mean vast changes in terms of human beings moving jobs, which companies are being successful, which ones aren't. There's no prediction what that is. My only words of wisdom, if they are take on board these ideas, practice them frequently and become good at them, because ultimately this is where work's going to be. Work you want to do, unless you want to drive an Uber or something.
But there's a robot going to do that for me, Shane.
Isn't that sort of ironic? Because I broke my ankle. I've spent a lot of time reading because my kids watch a lot of rubbish TV. So they take over the TV, and I suppose it's not rubbish, but it's not my TV. So I've read a lot. And one interesting book is an old book by Thomas Friedman, and I think it's Michael Madelon. And it's called That Used to Be Us. It's the sort of like the decline of America. Anyway, which is like, oh my God. So he talks about three roles in the modern society. He talks about creators, people that support creators. I would hope I'm one of those. And there's a gray area between those, you know, and then servers. And he basically puts the argument, you know, people that McDonald's and, you know, there's some servers that it's going to be very hard for computers to replace, you know, masseuses, you know, occupational therapists, et cetera, you know, these are servants that are very, very, and it sounds horrible saying servants, but they serve people, they serve society. Creators, ultimately, though, are going to be continually creating stuff that replaces them. And so I go to McDonald's occasionally with my children to celebrate something. Usually they haven't killed me or I haven't killed them. And we get a happy meal. The McDonald's now, you go in either using the app or there's this big like online thing, your touchscreen thing. My kids can operate this touchscreen. My oldest is 5.5. he can literally get his Happy Meal, select his milk, select, he even does optional things on it that I didn't even know you could do. He selects the apples instead of French fries. He, you know, adds milk. You know, I'm like, how did you do that? And he uses pictures because he can't read yet. So it's just crazy. Anyway, so that, yes, these people are going to be replaced, but it's really hard. I mean, and creating ultimately is where Agile fits so nicely, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's cool, Shane. It sounds bloody scary to me.
Interesting.
That's the better one.
So coming back to empiricism, at scrum.org, you are continually getting input and feedback. What are some of the trends? What are some of the things that you see?
Well, actually, funny you should say that. So PSM2, Advanced Scrum Master, the new class that came out at Agile, the reason why we did it, well, one of the reasons, there was a few, but one of the reasons why we did it was because we had an assessment in place before the class called PSM2. That gave us a lot of data. The simplest data was how many people were clicking on it. I mean, that's as simple as that. You know, then you had how many people were passing bits, failing bits, where they were having challenges, etc. And that led us down the journey. So the first thing that we saw from this was that there was the need for a class. That was interesting. There was both a need and an interest. You know, there was both a desire and we could actually do something to help people pass more successfully, you know, do stuff. So that's one of the motivations. The other thing that's interesting from the data that we collect, I mean, you know, 8 million people come to our website, mate. I mean, it's ridiculous. Sorry, that sounds like they're going for no reason. No, it's really amazing how many people are coming. You know, it's growing at about 75%. What we see from all these interactions, all this data we're collecting, all the, you know, 15,000 people doing assessments, all this, you know, per month or whatever. What we see that's really, really interesting is we see a few things. One, we see the rise of the importance of the product owner. Whether it's called a product owner, obviously, if you're doing Scrum, it is. But, you know, whatever it's called, the business representative, the person that's doing, I hate to use empiricism, but almost empirical innovation or continuously changing innovation, this sort of like this role, this business person getting agile. So we're seeing definitely a growth in that, and also a misunderstanding in that as well, a lot of challenges in that. Most organizations hate empowering people to make decisions. You know, if to become successful in a traditional organization, the most important thing that you do is keep your head down, right? Associate yourself when things are already successful. Oh, that was me. And keep your head down when things are going wrong. Whoops. Not the kind of model that would encourage empirical and a good agile kind of adoption. So that's the one thing. So we see the massive challenge that these organizations are facing with respect to product ownership. The other thing that's interesting is around self-organization. Again, traditional, hierarchical, risk-averse, etc. Those companies, you know, are having challenges with self-organization. Now, some of it is because we haven't given them the tools, whether it's delegation poker, you know, the management 3.0 stuff. So increasingly, I'm seeing, you know, the data is indicating that we need to help managers. That's one of the reasons why I brought professional agile leadership out last year. And we're not alone, you know. All of the bodies in the industry are bringing out more stuff. The DevOps report by Nicole and Jez talked about the lack of leadership. And, you know, so we increasingly see this sort of like move from a paternal management model to something else as a challenge. And we have a lot of data that supports that. And I don't know if we have all the right answers to solve all of this yet. You know, product ownership, I think, and agile product management or business management we're wrestling with. I spent some time in Stanford with the Lean Startup sort of gang. And what's interesting is, you know, they're trying to bring different ways of managing innovation or different ways of managing problems to the business community. Stephen Blank obviously is at the forefront of that. But some of those things are just not very consumable in the way in which capital is allocated or managed. You know, so how the banks treat you. Imagine going to a bank and saying, well, this is our business. We don't know if it's going to be a success, but to run the first 15 sprints to actually determine whether it's going to be a success, you've got to lend me $10 million. Well, they're going to say, huh? You know, it's, you know, we're going to have to see different models, and that's why Kickstarter, that's why micro lending is coming up. Also, the government doesn't get it either yet, you know, the way in which it manages innovation. So Hacking for Defense is a great example of us starting to drive some of that into the world. But no, so they're the two sort of areas that we see the most opportunity, interest, product ownership, and self-organization or management of organizations, as it were.
So what are you doing with this data?
Well, obviously, I'm doing what any good product owner does with data. I'm completely ignoring it and doing other things. No, part of me sometimes does that because I've got a day job. I'm far too busy. So product ownership is a key theme for Scrum.org, particularly in 2019. You know, there are two PSTs recently, Don and Ralph, they happen to be stewards of the product owner curriculum, wrote an interesting book in our series, Professional Scrum series. You know, that's the start of, you know, there's going to be some new classes, maybe around design thinking, maybe around, there's going to be stuff coming out around product ownership, because I believe that we as an industry, as a, I don't know, as a change force, I don't know what to call us now, need to do something around product ownership. I know I've been a product manager for, what, I guess, 20 years. Oh my God. You feel ancient when you say that to somebody and they say, well, I was still at high school then. You're like, oh, great. But yeah, for 20 years. And I still don't feel I've got the right tools. Yeah, I've got things like Lean Canvas, story mapping, empathy maps now. But part of me still thinks that we need to improve the practice of product ownership. So that's going to be a focus for 2019, which is exciting. And then leadership, you know, I don't know whether we are alone at Scrum.org can do everything. I mean, our agile leadership stuff, curriculum is out. We're starting to work more on that. We're starting to raise the transparency around the skills needed. We recently added a competency model to Scrum.org that just talks about what skills you need to be more competent in professional Scrum. That helps equip a leader with a better understanding of the sort of skills. We're still a long way from really being empirical enough, I think, around that. You know, and then, you know, working with organizations and, you know, like McKinsey, Boston Consulting, others that are really driving that strategic agenda in organizations around change. There's some of the things we're working on. I think, though, just by focusing on those two roles, I'm not saying Scrum Master isn't being focused on, it is, and that's definitely a servant to leadership, and not saying that team member isn't. We obviously care very deeply about them. But the product owner and the leader are two key roles for driving change. By concentrating on them, I think we can exert a lot more change in organizations or provide an environment to successfully enable that.
Before we wrap up, any messages for the audience out there?
I guess the final thing really is just this: empiricism is so important. Transparency is so important. You said it, and I didn't think I'd have this idea, but ultimately, I think if we can become more empiric, the reason why we do assessments and they're decoupled from the training, the reason why we try to provide transparency around how we do this stuff, we use GitHub internally for development, we have this very open, but is around empiricism. And I think that if every person can think about how they can make their work more transparent, how they can become more open and honest. You know, particularly at the moment, and I don't know when this is going to air, it's probably going to be in a few months' time, but at the moment in the United States, we have, you know, fake news is still all the thing. And I think that is really getting in the way of transparency. You can't trust anybody. And I think that if you can't be agile if you haven't got transparency and you haven't got that sort of empirical mindset. And I think that is at the heart of all the changes that we're seeing as we move to this different age. So if people can think about how they can do that, that would be really, really, really cool. I try and fail continuously to make things more transparent, and I always get it wrong, but I aspire to that every day. I think that's all I can really share.
Dave, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us. If people want to continue the conversation, where do they find you?
Oh, dave.west@scrum.org is always a good email address. I know email's a bit old school, so the millennials, please, obviously you can always tweet me as well, at David J. West, direct message or whatever. And of course, our website has all the contact details at www.scrum.org.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jane. Take care.